At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Hello and welcome to Golf Connections here on the Golf Getaways Digital Network at PlayGolfGetaways.com. I'm Mitch Lawrence. Happy to have you with us as always, especially coming into a season in which we'll all, I'm sure, give thanks for the great gifts we enjoy, certainly among them the game we all love. Today's show is truly a special one, sponsored by our friends at the golf packaging company StGeorgeUtahGolf.com. That's StGeorgeUtahGolf.com, where you can book getaways and buddy trips in one of the most beautiful settings in the American West. Creative, passionate people are all around us in every walk of life, and golf is no different. I think it's fitting in the season of giving that we can share with you three of the most talented among us, all of whom have spent countless hours dreaming and then doing whatever they needed to do to give us something special relative to the game. We'll hear from Tim Alpaugh, Akbar Chisti, and Tony Deere, and we'll talk beautiful tools of the game, fantastic head covers and other accessories, and a truly unique golf book that will walk you through the history of the game in a brand new way, I promise. I hope you enjoy this holiday episode of Golf Connections, and I am thrilled to begin it all with a good friend of mine and of the game, Tim Alpaugh. He of the multifaceted life paths, accountant, master carpenter, author, Hickory Club restorer, and most importantly for our holiday gift show, maker of the most beautiful and creative wooden pitch mark repair tools, among other things, on the planet, which you can see by going to Tim's Instagram account. Just go to Google Claret Dreamer Instagram, and it'll send you right to it. It is a fantastic place. You can also email Tim at claretdreamer@gmail.com as well. I could spend hours talking to Tim about so many topics and more, but in our limited time here, I want to focus on his amazing work with wood. Welcome to Golf Connections, Tim.
Thanks, Mitch. Good to be here.
So let's get started right away. It's the late 1990s. You get a common plastic two-prong pitch repair tool from a local golf club. We've all seen them. How in the world did that lead you to making the pitch mark tools, which so many of us enjoy now?
Well, like everybody, I had one, and I've had hundreds of them, metal, plastic. And I was doing a project, and I had Purple Heart, which is, oddly enough, purple. But it's one of the harder woods. I use it to make knife handles. And I saw it one day, and I said, why don't I try and fashion a few divot tools out of that wood? And I did. A number of friends said, oh, can you make me one? And this just blossomed. And a few years later, I had the opportunity to play in a golf tournament, and I finished first, and I won a plaque that was laser engraved. And a guy I went to high school with actually did the laser work on it. And we talked, and he said, I can do it on any kind of material. So I said, it would be perfect to be able to laser a club logo onto a divot tool. And I got involved with the people at ESPN following doing work for one of the senior tour events at a course by my house. And I happened to be walking with Arnold Palmer that day. And I gave him one of my tools. And at the end of the round, I asked him if he was interested in having them for the President's Cup team. And as gracious a guy as he is, he said, of course I would. So I made a bunch up for the international players and the American players and sent them down to sent them out to Latrobe, and they made their way down to Robert Jones Golf Club down in Manassas, Virginia. And he was kind enough to send me tickets to the event, provide me tickets to the event. And I went down with my college roommate. We walked around, and I happened to run into Tom Kite, gave him one of my tools, and he asked if we could make them for the following Ryder Cup, which was in Valderrama. And that just started the ball rolling. And then I went on and put them into a lot of pro shops in the New York, New Jersey area.
You know, there's a couple. These are such great stories. And it's literally, I know you. I know this is the way you work. You come from your heart. And the way you distribute and have distributed these is, to me, part of what's so special about it. It's a labor of love. Like I said, you're a carpenter, a master carpenter. Your connection to wood, obviously important. I love the connection as a hickory player to Purple Heart, which a lot of people don't know early on in terms of shafts before hickory. Purple Heart was one of the woods that was used in the shafts of golf clubs. So it seems almost to be coming full circle. And now tell us about, and I find this really interesting too. We're all used to seeing pitchmark repair tools with two prongs. And in the same way that fortuitous twists of fate can happen, take Post-its, for example, which was a mistake that went on to become something great. Tell us about that fortuitous twist relative to two tines on the tool instead of one, and how the one tine came into being.
I had offered one of my divot tools to Tom Watson, who said, thanks, but I use a T. And so I followed him that day, and he in fact did use a T to repair his ball marks. And I was making a two-prong tool one day, and one of the tines snapped off. And I'm sitting there looking at a one-tine divot tool, and I said, if it's good enough for Tom Watson, it's good enough for everybody else. So I tweaked and changed the shape and size of the pitchmark tool to incorporate a single curved tine. And it's morphed over the years to be large enough to hold a logo, skinny enough to hold a name. And there's been countless varieties of the same type of tool. But the greenskeepers of the different country clubs, the superintendents, they love the single prong tool because it doesn't damage the root system of the golf courses.
When you were kind enough to send me the first one, and I got it in the mail and I looked at it, and it looks different. And that single prong I had never used before. I'd used a tee before, but never really thought about it. But I have to say that once I started using it, forget the beauty of it and the feel of wood, which is fantastic. But it absolutely is, and I'm not just saying this, the best tool that I have ever used on a golf course. Does it surprise you when you get people's reactions to your tool after they use it the first time?
Initially, people would say, really, wood isn't going to break? And the woods that I do use, the Purple Heart, the Bubinga, the Coco Bolo, some of the harder woods that are used in making knife handles and hickory shafts back in the day, they don't break. And if people use them, I had one person who broke one, and I asked how it happened. They said they were trying to get their trunk open. And so I said, well, when it's used for the proper purpose, it shouldn't break over the course of your life. It'll get shorter because the sand underneath the grass sharpens the tine, and it becomes a lethal weapon if it's not cared for. People's response is amazing. The sensual feel of it in their hand, the lightness of it. They have to look and see which pocket they put it in because they don't have their pants hanging down on one side the way they do with a metal repair tool. Everyone has a favorable response to it.
Well, I as I said, I could talk to you for so long, and hopefully we'll get to do this again. There's a lot of other designs that you're coming up with, repurposed hickory shafts as a tool with a beautiful tartan wrapped around it and whipping, other great things. And again, you can see all of that on Instagram. Go to Claret Dreamer or email Tim directly at claretdreamer@gmail.com. And I'll throw in there a wonderful book that you read called Claret Dreams, which people can also get as a wonderful gift also. And I can't thank you enough for being with us. Again, these tools are the greatest thing that you can use relative to the game. Beautiful art and a truly functional tool. So thanks, Tim, for everything you're doing for the game. And as I said, we'll talk to you again soon. Happy holidays.
Thanks. Take care, Mitch. Happy holidays to you as well.
Coming up, we've got Seamus Golf's Akbar Chishti and the Story of Golf in 50 Holes author Tony Deere. You're going to love them. But first, since this is our holiday gift show, how about a golf getaway gift for you and your golfing buddies? The PlayGolfGetaways.com team just got back from an incredible week in St. George, Utah, at the foot of picturesque Zion National Park, and we're still raving about the amazing Red Rock Golf Trail courses. Everything from Sunbrook Golf Club, which just might be the best municipal course you'll find anywhere, to Sand Hollow Golf Resort, where the cliff-hanging back nine boasts one of the best and most fun stretches of golf holes in America. St. George is a year-round destination every golfer should know about. It's fun, challenging, and affordable. Plus, you can golf in the morning and explore Zion National Park or Snow Canyon State Park in the afternoon, where the views are simply unmatched. Just take a look at the photos by our award-winning photographer Brian Orr on the stgeorgeutahgolf.com website. We promise you'll be hooked like we are and ready to book your next golf trip to beautiful St. George, Utah. That's stgeorgeutahgolf.com, stgeorgeutahgolf.com. Happy to be joined now by Akbar Chisti, who, with his wonderful wife Megan, created one of the great companies in all of golf, Seamus Golf, which you can find amazingly at seamusgolf.com, SEAMUSgolf.com, which I suggest you do as this holiday season approaches from the beautiful state of Oregon, home base for Seamus Golf. Welcome to Golf Connections, Akbar. Great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm a huge fan of you guys.
Well, thanks. We return that favor. Trust me. Every day I return that favor. I'm sitting here looking at my beautiful head covers that cover my hickory driver and putter. We'll get to those in a second. I just want to kind of clue people in who amazingly may have not heard of Seamus Golf. This is a company that to me really reflects kind of the American dream, an idea that came to you guys from a small, everyday sort of occurrence. You and Megan grabbed it. You ran with it. You've built a fantastic business that's become very well known in the golf world, literally around the world in a short period of time. One day, you, Akbar, are living in the world of finance. And though you obviously love golf and you had some experience at Bandon and caddying, and all of a sudden, here we are talking about the success story that is Seamus Golf. I want you just briefly to explain how that story started.
You've got it pretty much nailed right there. You know, it was really an accident in many ways. My wife was a designer at a local apparel company, and she just went to fix a head cover of mine that my dad brought me from Scotland and just started making them for me and my buddies. And we're all total golf nerds, really into the history of the game and what it's all about. So we just started playing with Scottish tartans. And so that started with just this core set of buddies, and one of those buddies was at Bandon, and that became our first place to merchandise our product, which we couldn't have asked for a better partner to start our brand. And really, it was just going to be a hobby, but it just started to kind of go and grow, and my wife got really into it, so she quit her job, and then I got really into it, and you know, most CPAs don't quit their job to start a head cover company, but I did, And so, yeah, this is where we are now. You know, we have a great team of people here. We're no longer in our garage. We've moved twice into even yet a bigger shop. And we're lucky to be here in Portland because there's a group of artisans here that make awesome stuff. And we've partnered with a blacksmith most recently to make hand-forged ball marks and pitch mark tools and really the manner in which they're making old hickory putter heads and club heads, so on an anvil and hot furnace.
So let's just for the time being, let's stay with the head cover aspect, because that was my first exposure to Seamus, was in relation to these magnificent head covers. I have a County Kildare head cover for my Jack White hickory driver. I have a Buchanan tartan on my old Tom Morris putter. When I look at them every time I go out to play, I am absolutely instantly connected to something very personal to me. Not everybody's going to feel that way, but the beauty of these covers to me is that because people can pick and choose, and it's not just Scotland, it's Ireland, people can go back, find what interests them. Forget the fact that they're gorgeous head covers in terms of protection and ease and all that stuff. But the personal aspect of it to me, including the monograms on the leather tag, all of that makes you guys really special, and I would think that's what you started feeling right away, that you've only grown and expanded.
Yeah, it's having it be unique to the golfer is a big deal to us, because it's a great way to express your own personality or even your heritage. with your bag. I mean, if you came into our shop today here in Beaverton, Oregon, you'd see over 400 different tartans, and we hand cut each one individually. There's no stacks of fabrics because everybody's getting a different tartan. So it's pretty cool that you really won't see a whole lot of people with the same covers out there. But for those who have Scottish or Irish ancestry, we've done our best to embrace those golfers and make it available through our website, and you can get your head covers or your pouch and your family tartan, which the wool all comes from Scotland down in the border countries in Selkirk area, and we go over there to do some scouting trips and sometimes end up playing a little bit of golf, but you know, for the most part, just focusing on business.
I want to circle back for a second. Do you every day bow down to your wife, Megan, for the success of Seamus Golf?
You know, she's an incredible woman, and she's really the reason we have what we do here. Yeah, I would say I'm very respectful of her.
You know, I hope so.
I haven't really bowed down to her yet, but I think everything but that. I cower. How's that? Is that close enough?
That's good. As someone who's been married for 21 years, I suggest that you will get to the bowing down part at some point.
It's all in the phases of submission, really. So.
That's true. That's a whole other show. We'll get to that some other time. Let's just expand it a little further, because you've taken the initial idea of just the tartan. And now, and if you, again, you go to the website, SeamusGolf.com, and you'll be able to see the myriad of products that are available on this great website and this great company. But I love the idea that now there's tartan and leather combined. There's simple leather head covers also, but the tartan and leather combination that can be monogrammed also, that's a fabulous idea that seems like you've started to run with as well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's tough to offer a million different options and have it truly completely customizable. But when we come up with a new idea, which isn't always our own, a lot of times our customer says, "Hey, can you put a monogram on the top in leather?" And we're like, "Yeah, we don't see why we can't do that." And we do it once, and you know, we show the picture to folks and they're like, "Oh my God, can we do this?" And so then we try to make it available. So this whole concept is a few months, you know, in the works. But we're pretty stoked to be doing that, bringing the leather to the tartan and tweed and some of our other accessories too.
I first met you and Megan at the PGA Merchandise Show a year ago almost, and I am so looking forward to getting back there and seeing you again. Are you going to have the anvil there?
Last time we took my little railroad track anvil, you know, up at Chambers Bay, yeah. We took a bigger anvil. I just bought a 520-pound anvil that's now abandoned. But I'm probably just going to bring about a 120-pound one to the show, and then we'll take it over to Stream Song. So it'll kind of have a resting place over there.
Right. Well, I can't, again, go to SeamusGolf.com, go to Instagram, Seamus Golf. You'll be able to see all this fabulous work. And I can't thank you enough, Akbar, Megan, Lyle, Ashley, anybody involved at Seamus Golf, a great company, fabulous customer service. And I can't think of many things better for the holidays. Thanks for everything you do for the game.
Thank you for having me on.
Time now to talk to one of my favorite writers in the game, Mr. Tony Deere, who will be joining us from his home in Bellingham, Washington. Tony's has been quite a journey to get to that home. Growing up in England, playing golf at a very high level for the Liverpool University golf team based at Royal Liverpool Golf Club. Then starting to write about the game and being a key contributor now for almost 20 years in some of the most well-known names in golf, first in the print media, now, of course, in the digital world as well, for Magazine, Today's Golfer, the New York Sun, Cyber Golf, Lynx Magazine, Arnold Palmer's Kingdom Magazine, and the RNA's Open Championship Magazine, among the names you might be familiar with. He's had stops after England in Phoenix, Denver, Seattle, and now Bellingham. He's written 5 books, the latest of which, The Story of Golf in 50 Holes, is a fascinating and amazing trip through the history of golf in a most unique way. You can find it on Amazon.com or at Barnes & Noble, other bookstores. And you can follow Tony on Twitter at Tony J. Deere. It is great to have you with us here on our holiday edition of Golf Connections, Tony. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mitch. Thank you very much for having me.
I mentioned your other books on golf, and when I looked them up, they included Good Golf Made Easy, 101 Golden Rules of Golf, and what has to be the most ambitious of them all, Every Golf Question You've Ever Wanted Answered, which, of course, to me, I just have to go and get that now because I have a lot of questions. But here you are in your latest book, which to me is certainly almost as ambitious, teaching us all about the evolution of the game, its history, architects, players, innovations using 50 golf holes. A fascinating idea. Tell us how you got started in that particular project and how it progressed to the point it is now, this great book on golf.
Actually, it was a company in Brighton in England called Quid Publishing, which I'd worked for before. That was my previous book. They approached me about 2 years ago with the idea for a book that covered the history of golf using golf holes as opposed to golf players or golf events. They weren't sure exactly how many holes to use at the time, nor which holes they should be. So we discussed it over the phone for a few weeks. We decided that 50 would be a good number, not too many, not too few. And the book should explore not only great events that have happened at those various holes, but also kind of the development of golf course architecture and some of the most famous holes in that regard. We had finalized the plan. And they went to the Munich book show in early 2014 to discuss the book and see what sort of interest for it there was. And there was a great deal of interest. So they came back to me later in the year, I think in maybe June or July 2014, and actually commissioned it. And I set to work in the end of August 2014 and completed it at the end of September 2014.
So really, it didn't take you that much time, which is amazing to me, because as I look through this book, and you can spend so much time, there's so much to digest in here, it would seem to me that it would have taken a lot longer based on the information and the research that seemed like it would have gone into it. It's amazing to me that you got it done that quickly.
Well, thank you. There's a couple of things. First of all, I've been thinking about it we were discussing this book for a number of months before they actually commissioned it. So I was thinking an awful lot about which holes I was going to choose and about those holes in particular. So when I actually started writing, I had it all planned out. I had the 50 holes that I was going to use if indeed, Quid Publishing did come back to me and commission the book. So I hit the ground running. I was raring to go when I started. And sure enough, I mean, I only had 4 or 5 weeks to actually complete the text, and that was somewhere between 1500 and 2000 words a day, most weeks, seven days a week. I think there was maybe a week or two in there when I only worked six, but you know how it is, when you get going like this on something like this, on a project like this, you love it so much, you're enjoying it so much, you just don't stop, you can't stop, and it just flows out of you, and the research is, it's just part of it. You just love it. I mean, there are so many things that I discovered in the book that I didn't know before, that I'd only had, a passing idea of or a glimpse of before. And, to really delve into those subjects and write about them thoroughly was just an absolute joy. It was so much fun.
When I read this book, and I find myself getting excited the way you do, because even the holes that we're familiar with, for example, the road hole at St. Andrews or the 15th at Augusta, there's so many of them, the postage stamp at Troon, there's something in those particular chapters, those pieces of those holes that is new, something I've never read before, or a story about the hole. You said you felt excited as you were going. To me, it's the most fascinating part of the book, almost. Things you thought you knew about a hole that you're finding out there's so much more to uncover.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the best example is the chasm hole at Biarritz-la-Fère in France. I knew that was a hole that I wanted to include because it has had such a profound effect on golf course architecture. yes, there aren't many Beer Ritz holes in the world today because most of them, if not all of them, appear at very private golf clubs. But I knew it was a very important part of golf course architecture. And C.B. McDonald obviously was responsible for them. So I knew that at some point I was going to want to include Beer Ritz LaFaire. And I knew it was going to take a great deal of research because I knew about the course and I knew about the holes that came, you know, the Beer Ritz holes that came out of it. But I didn't really know the story in depth. And I remember being, I was in Spokane. I was doing a speaking event in Spokane, Washington one evening. And I got back to my hotel at about 7 o'clock, had a spot of dinner, went up to my room. And I knew that I was going to have to start researching this Beer Ritz LaFaire hole soon. So I thought, oh, why not now? There weren't any games on TV that night. So I didn't even turn on the TV. I started reading about Beer Ritz LaFaire, just Googled it. At 8 o'clock, I remember looking down at the time on my computer. It was 8 p.m. When I first started Googling Beer Ritz LaFaire. And I turned my computer off at 5 a.m., having read and followed every possible link you could find about Beer Ritz LaFaire. And I had an hour's sleep, and I was at Spokane Airport at 7 a.m., and flew back to Seattle a couple of hours later. But for 9 hours, I suddenly became an expert on the chasm hole of Beer Ritz LaFaire and Beer Ritz holes thereafter. It was so much fun. I just couldn't stop. You know, once you find a subject that you love, it doesn't matter what time it is, and it doesn't matter how tired you're feeling. You just carry on reading.
Well, one of the things, and again, we have so little time to really delve into this, but the one thing that I do want to let everybody know is that this is literally a trip around the world. This is not just golf holes in Scotland, golf holes in America. The second hole in the book from 1822, the eighth at Ratho Farm, is from Bothwell in Tasmania, Australia. And the story about this place, which I had never even heard of, I was completely unfamiliar with this particular course, this hole in the story, is the kind of thing that you get in this book all the way through it. I cannot tell you how wonderful a job Tony has done and the amount of information in a great way, a very fun and interesting way that is included in this tremendous book. So the story of golf in 50 holes. Tony, again, hopefully we'll have you on again because I could spend a long time going through different stories. But I just want to say on behalf of all of us, thanks for what you've done. Thanks for this great gift idea, whether you get it now for yourself, for your friends, for the holidays, anytime throughout the year. This is a fantastic, fantastic thing to give someone who loves golf, the story of golf in 50 holes. Tony, dear, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Mitch. Thank you for having me.
I can't emphasize the three people we've had on, and I want to thank all of them, Tim Alpa, Akbar Chisti, and Tony Deere for their great work. Really special holiday gift possibilities. Check them all out. And for our esteemed guiding force, Darren Bunch, all of us at PlayGolfGetaways.com, here on the Golf Getaways Digital Network, I'm Mitch Lawrence, wishing you and yours a peaceful, golf-full holiday season. We'll talk to you soon. So long.